fisherman said, you're not right. Now I'm staying up all night.
Hey friends, it's the Crow Boys. Our debut album, Made to Wonder, is out now.
Download and stream it wherever you listen to music.
Well, hello and welcome to Basic Folk, where we have honest conversations with folk musicians on the bluegrass situation. Today, our guest is Chris Delmhorst. This is nice. It is always a pleasure talking to Chris. I've known Chris for many, many years. Since we were both rolling around in Boston, I started working at WERS at the folk show at the Coffee House in the year 2000. She was already a pretty big deal in the Club Passim Cambridge folk scene. I always thought she was super cool. And yeah, just a pleasure to have her on. Before we get fully into Chris Delmhorst, let's talk about Basic Folk's mailing list. You can sign up for that at the link in the show notes or at basicfolk.com. It's a once-a-month email, and it's the best way to stay in touch with the podcast. You can also follow us on social media. We are at Basic Folk Pod on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. And you can also make a financial contribution to Basic Folk. You can do that at the link in the show notes, or you can go to basicfolk.com, give like $5 a month and help us out. Help us produce this cute little folk podcast. Okay, Chris Delmhorst is not a good sleeper. The Western Massachusetts songwriter is usually awake from 2 or 3 a.m. to about 4 or 5 a.m. Sometimes it's like a nice floaty feeling, but other times she is wide awake worrying about anything her brain can get a hold of. This is similar to a feeling with which she ended her 10th record, Ghost in the Garden, with the song Something to Show, the album closer. Thankfully, she sets us straight and explained, indeed, the track is a hopeful prayer that she will have something to show for all the questioning, trying, pushing through, and general work that she and her fellow humans are doing. Too bad it can't happen in the daylight hours, though. In our conversation for Basic Folk, we talk about this and the other themes and songs on the new album, like the unbearable emotional density of summer ending, ambient restlessness during destruction, carrying unresolved loves, and of course, death. Chris experienced a great loss in 2021 with the death of her dear friend and collaborator, Billy Conway. Her husband, Jeffrey Foucault, memorialized Billy on his 2024 album, The Universal Fire, which he called a working wake for their friend. Jeff appeared on Basic Folk and spoke at length about Billy and what he meant to the Boston music community last year. I encourage you to listen to that conversation and Jeff's record, The Universal Fire. Chris had known Billy for many decades. He produced a couple of her early albums and had been a huge presence in her life. The title track, Ghosts in the Garden, addresses Billy's death, which sounds like it was a beautiful one, something that not very many people experience. He was surrounded by a house full of friends and family celebrating his life and keeping him company up until the moment he passed. There are many types of ghosts on the album, lost loves and past mistakes, roads not taken, and our possible futures, too. It was recorded at Great Northern Sound in rural Maine, which is inside an 1800s farmhouse that must keep its own ghosts. Chris, a great lover of collaboration, brings in many guest vocalists like Rose Cousins, Anais Mitchell, Anna Egge, Taylor Ashton, Rachel Bayman, Anna Tivel, and her husband, Jeffrey Foucault. I was actually surprised to learn that she had not actually planned for any guest vocalists. She made the decision, recorded some reference mixes in Maine, and then listened on the drive home. She was startled to discover that she heard each guest vocalist on the track with her in the car, which prompted her to write some emails and get them all on the record. The songs want what the songs want, so you better give it to them or else maybe more ghosts. We're going to take a listen to clips from the record throughout the interview. So I hope you enjoy as we talk about Ghost in the Garden, the new record from Chris Delmhorst on Basic Folk.
Thank you.
Chris Delmhorst, hi, how's it going?
Hi, it's good. It's going good.
I'm very happy to talk with you today.
And likewise.
Awesome. So congratulations on 25 years in this business.
What the hell?
The year 2000, that's when I started my music journey as well, so.
Well, Cindy, if you want, I mean, my tape came out in 1996.
I know, like, when I got to Emerson at the WERS Coffee House, you were already an established legend.
Of course.
I can say that. So it's over 25 years.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
It's pretty weird.
And for, like, the longest time, I've heard you and other people refer to you as KD, mm-hmm. except for Jeff, who calls you Chrissy.
I know. He's the only one who's allowed to call me that.
I figured. So I thought about this because you credit yourself in the liner notes on Ghosts in the Garden as KD. And I know, like, they're your initials, Chris Delmhorst.
Yeah.
But there is something about, like, how it sounds when you say it. Like, calling you KD is like when you have that friend where you just say, like, their first and last name.
Yeah,
it just, like, feels so natural. It feels automatic. How long have you been referred to as that? And how do you feel about KD?
I like KD. I guess I do it sometimes in the liner notes because of how much I just hate seeing my name over and over and over again.
Oh, no.
Because it's like, you know, you end up having a, you know, your name comes up a lot in the credits and it just starts to be like too much of it. I don't know. It's too much of it. I guess my name has always been, I mean, Delmhorst, it's kind of like, it's a little bit of a beast of a name. It's like, it's not super melodious. I don't know. The whole thing doesn't really roll off the tongue. It's like, it's fine, but it's never been, I never love to, like, to say my whole name or to read my whole name for some reason. It's just like never really makes me that happy. So I think, like, the whole bunch of people, kind of the Boston music scene started calling me KD. And there's a bunch of people that you'll call. There's a lot of calling people by initials, I guess, but I don't know. Mine just really seemed to stick and I'm into it. I like it.
I'm surprised to hear that you weren't KD growing up.
No, I was Chrissy growing up, and that's why. And then I finally, like, over years and years of really applying myself and effort and determination, I managed to lose it. And then Jeff started calling me that one. And so that's why he's the only one. He's the only one.
Changing your name from, like, a nickname to, like, another name, it's like changing the part in your hair.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's got to stay strong.
You got to just breathe through it.
Ghosts in the Garden is your 10th album in 25 years, and the album is a meditation on grief, loss, and fate. I like how you define grief as also being lost loves, past mistakes, roads not taken, and our possible futures. So usually, like, when you think of grief, it's like after a death, but, like, this really kind of opens it up. How does thinking about grief this way help face that grief feeling?
I guess because if you think of it as the death version, like a literal death that you're grieving, then it's like it's an episode. I mean, of course, you never stop grieving someone that you lose, but it's like it almost makes it like an exception to the norm. But I think grief of one kind or another is part of us all the time. You know, like you're noticing it more or less, or you're feeling it in different ways, or it's attached to different things, but it's just like loss is constantly, constantly a companion for all of us in lots of different ways. And so it's like, and it is even necessarily, I mean, you think of grief as sort of a negative emotion, but I don't think it necessarily is all the time. It's, you know, it's that thing that's like almost the other side of the coin of love. You know, it's just like a very strong emotion that can really tie you to people or you know, it's like it's a tie, even if it's sort of a via yearning than having, you know. So I don't know, I guess it's just like a piece of the whole richness of being alive. And I think, like, specifically in terms of death, like, there's certainly some literal death on this record, and I feel really strongly about that death is, I mean, obviously in our culture we're really weird about it and we like to just pretend it's not a thing and, like, la la la, you know. And so it's sort of a smaller version of that same thing where, like, letting the fact of having something or wanting something or loving something and then having it go away is like so much of what opens us up emotionally and gives us dimension, gives us depth, and, like, you know, actually makes life a lot more dimensional than it is if you just focus on, like, all the pretty stuff. Now I can't even remember what you asked me, but maybe that is relevant. But I just said.
Yeah. Usually when we get to a point in the question where someone's like, I don't remember the question, neither do I.
Perfect.
A little behind the scenes info. So Ghosts in the Garden was recorded at Great North Sound in Maine, which you called the Enchanted Kingdom, which is a studio built in the 18th century. It's a Maine farmhouse, and you say no doubt harbors ghosts of its own. So I was crawling all over the liner notes and crawling all over this album, and I found that Jenna Rozelle was cooking for you in the band, and I was like, that name sounds familiar to me. And Dave Simonette from Trampled by Turtles also knows Jenna and, like, had connected us a few months ago. And so I had, like, fallen off our text thread. So thanks to you, Chris. She even told me she was writing your liner notes, and, like, I fell off the text thread, but thanks to you, I picked it up again today. So we're going to try to get together.
It's all working out. Jenna's the best.
So Jenna was your cook, and she wrote your liner notes, and her description of the experience, like, from what I can gather, Jenna was not in the recording sessions. She left you your food and didn't even, like, witness you eating it. Her description of the experience is like a ghost. So I wonder if that was, like, why she was a good choice to describe the record.
That's so cool. I didn't even think of that, but that's really true. We did hang out with her. Jenna Rozelle is a food writer, wild food educator, hunter.
She's a Maine woman.
Fisherman, total Maine woman. And really, like, an incredible person. And she lives right in the same town that the studio is in, and there's only, like, 12 people who live in that town, so it's kind of crazy that she lives there. And she fed us dinner during the session, because the studio is, like, in the middle of nowhere, and we all just camp out there and stay there. So, and I, although I love to think about food the rest of the time, I don't like to think about food when I'm recording at all. And so she would come in with dinner every day. And she did end up eating with us once or twice. And she did do a little bit of cooking, like finishing the meal in the house, but she would just kind of sneak in. We'd be working. So she would sneak in and do whatever she needed doing. And there were these amazing meals, because she's really into incorporating wild and foraged ingredients. So they would have crazy, like, acorns in them and stuff, but incredible. Anyway, so then she would come in and be doing her thing, and she could kind of hear, because some of the band was in the one part of the house, and then I was upstairs on the second floor. And so she could kind of hear our voices and music kind of through the house. She was never in the room when we were recording, but so she just had this very interesting perspective on the whole thing. And then I just thought of it afterwards, because I just love her writing so much. And so it's like, how crazy that there is a beautiful writer who happened to be in there listening to the record happen in this very weirdly filtered way, like through the house. And so, yeah, that's funny. She was sort of talking about the music as if it was being sort of ghostly in the house, but then she kind of was too. You're totally right. This invisible presence.
I remember the last time that we spoke, something that stuck with me. We spoke during the pandemic for the podcast, and you had released Long Day in the Milky Way, and you were like, oh, it's like, I'm not going to be able to, like, play these songs live and, like, get to know them the same way I've gotten to know my other songs, which is, like, truly striking to me and made me very sad.
Me too.
So I was going through the sequence of this album and I noticed, and I don't, thing is, it's like, if you know the songs this well, because you haven't been playing them over and over again since the album release, but we'll try it out anyways. So I noticed that there are some songs on this record that are in conversation with each other. And I was wondering if you had any thoughts about this. So I was like, maybe all of these songs have something in common. So I actually, like, I put the song order in front of me and then put, like, a couple words description.
I love it.
And the ones that came up that were, like, the same were, like, Wolves, Ghosts in the Garden, they're about death. Mm. They're back to back. Detour and Age of Innocence are kind of, like, about destruction of Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Those are back to back. However, there are two that I feel like should probably get together, but they're sandwiched in between the destruction of Earth songs. I sound like I'm playing, like, Cones of Dundor or something like this. But anyways, Not the Only One, and Lucky River. Seems like they're also in conversation. Mm-hmm. So anyways, that's just like a little word vomit of what I was thinking about when I was looking at the sequencing of this record. So my questions for you, Chris, are do you see any parallels in these songs? And then when you're writing songs and you're seeing that there's like common themes coming out or parallels coming out, is there anything you do to be like, oh, maybe I should like pay attention to these parallels?
Well, I definitely see common themes. And part of it is, there's a few things I could say about that. One thing is I had, because it had been a little while, I had a lot of songs kind of collected before we made this record. And so I actually had these, it's not on the wall anymore. I used to have it on the wall, like this crazy chart of all of probably 30 or 40 songs and kind of like grouping them into different families and different...
You were also playing Cones of Dundar.
I was totally playing Cones of Dundar, yes, for like a year, trying to figure out what, you know, which ones had anything to say to each other. And so that is how this batch of songs got together, is that they ended up like, A, I knew once I knew the band I was working with. Actually, I guess I really had sort of collected the songs, and then partly I chose the players based on, to fit the songs. But then the songs definitely seemed to be sort of like gathered around a central hearth of thematically, you know, and have something to do with each other in one way or another. Some of them are more obvious and some are more like subtle. But the songs themselves, I wasn't really writing in awareness of the other songs. And some of them have been around for a while. Some of them are more recent. So like they, in the writing process, I wasn't really thinking about that at all. The only one that it even occurred to me is Wolves, which was one that I wrote super late, like maybe 2 weeks before the session, which happens a lot in my experience. Like as the ethos of the record and the themes of the record kind of clarify in my mind, then there's oftentimes one song that kind of comes running to like catch the bus. And that's definitely what that one was. So I feel like that one, like maybe it wasn't very, I wasn't like really thinking about it, but I think it did get pulled into the whole, to the family of that record, because just it was a thing already kind of in my mind. But yeah, they're kind of, I think of it as kind of like a prism or something. Like it's sort of a lot of the same themes, and then they're kind of throwing different colors depending upon which song they're filtering through.
Yeah, and I think it's so brilliant to start off with Summer's Growing Old, which is like just about like right? That's like how you'd sum it up.
Yeah, that's perfect. You nailed it. I have I'm like one of the plagues of being me is that I'm really a second guesser about all my decisions. And I know when I've arrived at the right decision, I feel really solid about it, but sometimes it takes me a really long time to get there and a bunch of false starts. And Jeff calls it chasing the waiter, because I usually in a restaurant, like I order. And then once I order, I find that clarifies for me what I really wanted. And then I have to go run and chase the waiter and like tell them what I changed my order. Anyway, so Summer's Growing Old was kind of a chasing the waiter moment where we'd recorded, it was mastered, we had a sequence, it was all completely finished. And then I was like, wait, I need that one at the beginning. And it was an idea that a friend of mine had, a couple friends of mine, and it was sort of echoing exactly, it answered a problem that I was having with the record, which was how we got into it. And I really love it because it is like so open, that song. It feels like a prologue, like it sort of creates the space that the rest of the album can happen in. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You wrote a really great track by track about the songs on this record. And you said that Summer's Growing Old was to see if you could write something that you could sing in the round. and that it was like a technical quest and lyrics were stream of consciousness. So in the liner notes, you thank Matt the Electrician and your Song Game crew. Mm-hmm. So this kind of sounds like it came from that crew.
It did come from that, yeah, yeah. Yeah, several of the songs did.
What do you like about challenging yourself with this type of songwriting, either like on your own or with a group like Matt the Electricians?
The group, just to fill in, is a songwriting group made of a bunch of writers from all over the country. And it all happens on email. And our friend Matt the Electrician, who's a great songwriter, gives us a prompt every week. And everyone has to write a song to this prompt. And so it's usually like two or three words. And the rule is you just have to use those words in that order in the song at some point. And
don't you get kicked out if you don't do it?
I mean, in theory, but it's not that hardcore right now.
Okay. He's very nice.
So. He's a little too nice maybe. And it was, I mean, when I was a little more scared of getting kicked out, I was more consistent about it. So anyway, so I've been doing this on and off for like, I think I joined in 2014. I've been doing it for a long time and written a lot of really random songs for this project. But what's nice about that method, I love it. Before I joined the Song Game, I was actually really scared of it because I had never been someone who was great at writing a song on purpose. And I just didn't think I could really do it. You know, I always sort of had to wait for inspiration to strike. And the great gift of that game has been learning that's actually not true. And that I mean, I can't sit down and write a great song on purpose necessarily, but I can write a song. And the thing about having a prompt, especially if it's one you didn't choose, and sometimes, especially if it's one you think is just really stupid and like there's no way you can do anything with it, is it completely lets you off the hooks that you put yourself on. It takes you out of the mind space of like, ooh, I'm going to write the song and it's going to be really good. It just puts you in the space of like, I have to turn something in at midnight, you know, and I have to have something. So then it's like you get out of your own way in some really important ways. And then you're just you're not even really thinking about it. You're just like, ooh, I'll follow this random little idea I have or, you know, something. And it's like, there's just so many annoying parts of your brain that are standing around like ready to critique yourself too soon, you know, and you have to critique it, but you have to really, for me anyway, I have to stay out of the way as long as I can. And the prompts really help me do that. Hmm. So yeah, for that one, it was I can't remember which of those words were from the prompt. I think it was the neighbor's TV.
Oh, man. That's cool.
Yeah. And so it just grew out of that because I was just sort of freestyling from that. And so the little challenge I set myself, I had been wanting anyway to write something that you could sing as around. And so I just kind of focused on that. And I didn't focus on the lyrics and I just was singing whatever was happening. But then it turned out like it's cool and it's cool in a way that I probably would have never in a million years written on purpose, you know, and that's what I really love about that kind of stuff.
What do you think when you hear somebody say who is like a fantastic songwriter that you admire, like, oh, I don't know how to write a song. I couldn't teach a songwriting class. I don't know how to explain it.
I completely relate to that because I've only taught a few songwriting classes, but I felt that way for a long time. Like, I don't really know how to do it. It's almost something, I guess I felt superstitious about it. Like it was a thing that would happen. I was almost worried if I just thought about it too hard or brought too much of an analytic mind to it, that it would disappear, that it wouldn't happen anymore, you know, because it felt like magic sort of to me. So I used to have this, a real resistance to the idea of teaching songwriting in any way, because I was like, who am I to do that? I don't know how to do it. I'm just, you know, making it up. But then of course everyone's making it up. And I do now have like a lot of, for me, the whole thing about songwriting, the main project is what I was just talking about, like getting out of my own way and letting sort of like going fishing in my subconscious and finding things that are much more interesting than the top levels of my brain would have thought of, you know, when it's trying to like be helpful, but it just doesn't really, a song I write on purpose where I know what I'm writing about from the outset is almost always going to be a song that I'm just not that interested in. So for me, when I do a workshop, that's usually what I'm sharing, is like ways that I've learned to keep my conscious brain out of the room for as long as possible. So I feel like that's, you know, and everyone's going to take that differently. And maybe for some people that's not even helpful at all, but that's all. But whenever I like teaching songwriting, all that is being like, here's some stuff that works for me, you know, and then people can just do whatever they want with that.
I love the getting my brain out of the way. Mm-hmm. And you describing that kind of reminds me of like back in the 90s when I was in high school, mm-hmm. there was like a poster in the choir room that's like, leave your baggage at the door. It's like all the kids leaving their backpacks and another emotional baggage.
Totally.
So I've got questions about some of these songs. Let's go with Wolves.
Dark on dark, patient pride, just outside the edge of the light. Know how to wait, how to sit tight. Child, you were the tallest one, block out the sun, little bit smaller now the closer they come. Oh, but hey, no, there's no shame, someday we'll know all their names. There's no wrong, there's no blame.
So this is a song about trying to make friends with death, a.k.a. the wolves. So how close have you gotten with making friends with death?
Well, I mean, this song in particular, it's like, it's about preparing yourself to meet death, and in particular of your parents. Like for me, I was thinking about my parents as they're getting older and like they're fine and good, but like, you kind of, I had said this phrase to a few people and they'd be like, how are your parents? I'd be like, they're great. But you sort of, but we're starting to see the wolves gather around. And by which I meant like, you know, there's things around the edges where you're like, oh, maybe that's going to become a big thing. Maybe that's going to be, you know, what takes them out. Like, and I know they're thinking that same way too, of course. And, so just the awareness of it, like coming and trying to be ready for it, is what that song is about. So in terms of that specific way, I don't know yet how we're gonna do it.
Then we burned all the bad news, all the shit that we can't use. You were my first glimmer, it's true. Now look at this circle of life. Dark side of a dark year, down to zero and the stars are clear. Feel the edges disappear. You can fall right into the night. Ghosts in the graveyard, hearts in the room, trying to do everything we learned from you.
I have, you know, another one of the songs, the title track Ghosts in the Garden, is about when our friend Billy Conway died. And it's sort of describing the scene of that exit. We were all kind of in his house for a week or two on and off. A lot of people just being there and keeping him company while he was basically working on dying. And that experience taught me so much about what it can look like to do death with like respect and a sense of humor and a sense of just like folding it into as a part of life, which is what it actually is, you know? And so, so I'm really grateful for that. I mean, I don't know, obviously no one just like does a beautifully elegant version of dying, but that was about as close as I could ever imagine anyone.
Yeah.
And so I think for all of us there was like a huge gift in terms of expanding our idea of what it can be like to be, you know, not okay every minute, but like big picture, kind of okay with the idea of death.
I love the way that Ghosts in the Garden starts. Like it seemingly starts like mid-conversation. Then we burned all the bad news, all the shit that we can't use. Mm-hmm. Was that your intention to make it seem like you'd already been talking?
It just came out that way, but I kind of like it. And especially in terms of, I really liked it when we were sequencing the album because it's like, you know, Wolves ends and then it's kind of like, so anyway, you know, it's like the songs are sort of having this little conversation. Yeah, that's just kind of the way that one came out. That's just the way it started.
Yeah, there was one day I was at work at the radio station in Pittsburgh, and my colleague and I were talking about songs that start mid-sentence. Mm. There's a few of them out there. I'll put this one on the list.
Yeah.
I'll have to send it to him and be like, here you go.
Yeah, yeah, add it to the list.
Add it to the list. The next song won't be long. Mm. My question for you was this the most fun song to record?
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was super fun, and it's really fun to play every night too.
It seems like the last time we spoke, we talked about like how much rock and roll that is actually in your lexicon and in your background. So it's cool to hear you kind of get a little rock and roll.
Yeah, like kick out the jams a little bit. I know that it's you know, it's generally a pretty slow record and pretty like subdued. And so I think even more so in this context of the record, it's such a release. It definitely feels like that in the show. It feels great.
There are tons of guest vocalists on this record. Mm-hmm. Rachel Baiman is singing on Won't Be Long. And prior to this, you hadn't met her, but you heard her music and you're just like, I want her on this song. Mm-hmm. So you're someone who loves collaborating with people and has many people who have sang guest vocals with you on your records over the course of your career. How often does that happen when you're like, I want Rachel Baiman on this one, I want Rose Cousins on this one, mm-hmm. Anais on this one, this person I've never met on this one? Like, what was your curator's mind like on this record for the guest vocalists? Mm.
Well, on this one, it was kind of interesting because I wasn't actually planning to have guest vocalists at all because...
What?
I wasn't...
No one believes you.
I know, it's really true. I mean, I knew that a few of the songs were going to want parts, but I was thinking I would do them myself because... On the last record, I had Rose and Rose and Annie in the studio with me, and there was like the backing vocals were such a huge part of it, and so I wasn't really thinking that way. I was thinking really small band, like keeping everything very small and the cast of characters very small, and then so we tracked with just the three guys and me, and then Sam sent me the Ruffs, and I was listening to the Ruffs on a drive home from Boston really late and dark road. And I literally heard all of those people who are on the record right now, like heard those voices as I listened down the tracks, heard them like they were in the car with me. It was the weirdest. I've never had that experience before where it was just like, there they are. It was, I mean, I all the time I hear a vocal part and then I'll be like, oh, who would be fun to sing that? But this was just like, there they are. Like the song has spoken. That's the person that it wants to have on there. So wow. I went home and I just emailed them all the next day and was like, Rachel, I didn't know. Anna Tivel had actually stayed in my house twice, but I wasn't here either time. So I didn't, we sort of felt like we knew each other, but in fact we didn't. Yeah. It was funny. I mean, Taylor, I know, but not super well, but it just, I'm sure for him, it was a little out of the blue, you know, when I asked him to do it, but, I don't know. I just followed my gut on that one. I really love it because it was like this record with a tiny little family and all of a sudden it has this big sprawly, you know, family, and it felt really good.
Yeah. Everybody's guest performances are like knockout. I feel like it's hard to pick a favorite, but mine is Anna Tivel's.
I really love it too.
That's a good one. So she's singing on the song Not the Only One where the repeating line is. So I think this is my favorite song in the record. Mm. So I have lots to say about it.
Hey you, with your hands on the table, you, with your eyes on the wall, you thinking a mile a minute, hey you, saying nothing at all, you watching
repeating line is, "You're not the only one with a broken heart." And of the song, you say, "I love the way it cuts two ways as reassurance you're not alone and or a reality check to remember that your pain isn't the only pain." I heard it first as the reality check, oh, which, cool. Like, I don't know what that says about a person.
Yeah, it's like maybe it's like the dress. Yeah.
It's totally like, what color is the dress?
Totally.
So, all right, here's the question. This is a note, I think, from your press release.
Okay.
"Ghosts in the Garden," about the record, explores the hidden country of grief, which is such a cool way to describe it, a land that we all inhabit together but often navigate alone. And it is strange to think that we, like, all go through this grief, but usually figure it out on our own.
Yeah.
So when I was watching the video for Not the Only One, so there's a note that's like being passed around and it's going from like person to person and people are reading it. And the note says, "You're not the only one with a broken heart," which is the line that repeats in the song, which makes them feel less alone, even if you are like checking yourself, even though they're actually alone. So like, what do you think of that truth of like, you're not the only one, but you're actually the only one that you can get you through it.
Right. I mean, that's true. Like, fundamentally, at the end of the day, you're the, you know, it is, it's you. But I think knowing that in both the ways, in both senses, like, you have that, you're going through that, but so is everyone else. So in a way, it's like you're the only one who can, like, breathe oxygen into your own lungs, but everyone else is doing it too. So it's kind of like, you know, it's shared in that way. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like a shared facet of our existence. It's just like grief, you know, that's like we were talking about before. It's everyone's got it. It's kind of like tagging along with you, and maybe you're thinking about it, maybe you're not, but it's kind of, you know, it's with you and it's with everybody. So yeah, kind of like,
this is good to keep in mind as we welcome a baby into the world.
Absolutely. Oh, yes.
Breathing in the lungs. You're the only one that can breathe for you. You're the only one that can sleep for you.
Good luck with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Uh-huh. Cool. Also, thank you for following my wacky narrative on that song.
Oh, yeah. But
I really loved it.
Thank you. Yeah, it was really, that video was an incredible process to make because we just filmed.
Yeah, how did you make it?
We, you know, it was, I had this vision and I got my friend Jason Goodman, who's a really beautiful cinematographer, and he came out to my town and we just wandered around and we just handed the note to people and filmed them. Like we asked if we could do it and then we did it. And so they were all,
those are genuine reactions.
They're all genuine reactions. They're all people reading that for the first time and like whatever it means to them. And it was so emotional and so fascinating to see like all the different ways that people react. Like some of them, it obviously just like touched a nerve right away and people would sort of tear up. Some of them kind of like got very protective almost of themselves, like got a little bit like armored up. You could see them kind of being like, whoa, like that's kind of too, that's a soft spot that I don't want to like touch in public, you know, like that. And, some people sort of laughed like they were awkward. And I don't know. It was really wild to see it play out on all these people's face.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a cool couple of days.
There is a shot of you in a shop. You like get some flowers out of the cooler. Yeah. And then there are these like cats that you walk by. And I was like, she better pet those cats. Did not disappoint me.
Obviously, I'm going to pet the cats.
Obviously.
We went walking and talking in sheltering pines, picking clovers and violets and sweet serpentines. The blood in our veins, it was singing and rhyme, unaware of the boundaries of space and of time. She said, "You are a soldier bound for the front.
The next song, Beyond the Boundaries. Mm. So this is a fictional narrative about star-crossed wartime lovers fated to part. It's also about, which is, I think, really cool, carrying unresolved loves with you. This is the one that Taylor is singing on. When fictionalizing these characters, like, the question that comes to mind for me is, like, what war were you thinking about and why?
I don't even know if I was thinking about a war. I mean, I guess, I don't know, my kid sort of loves, like, World War II romance, tragic romance stories. So that's probably the time period I was thinking about. But when I was writing it, it was sort of more like an elemental, like an archetypical, just sort of, that's just kind of the story that came out. I left the story really open, and I didn't put a whole lot of signifying details in it. So it can be really whatever war you want, Cindy. Mm-hmm. Make it your own.
Yeah, no, just curious if it was
I had to say, it would
1812 or.
Oh, 1812 is a good one. Yeah. Yeah, I was picturing, I mean, there were trains involved. I think I was picturing a World War II kind of situation.
Yeah. I figured it was like a World War II because there is like some kind of like weird romance about World War II.
I know, isn't that weird? It was definitely not romantic at the time. Push a little boat out.
Song of the album, not very happy about this. You're leaving us with this one. So this song is about wanting something to show for all of the worrying that you have been doing. And in your case, Chris, it often happens in the middle of the night. The line is, give me something to show for all my sleepless nights. And then you're like, goodbye, the album is over.
Thank you, goodbye.
So usually this is a question that I would have liked to have started the interview off with, but what has been your history with worrying, anxiety? Like, when have you worried the most? Any tips on managing?
Well, I mean, I'm not a particularly anxious or worried person, I wouldn't say, in the big picture. However, I am really bad at sleeping now, and I didn't used to be, and I do blame my child, and I'm sorry to tell you that. But it just, yeah, now there's a section of the night, most nights, that's kind of like, it's like your 2 to 4, 3 to 5 kind of time when I am usually going to spend part or all of that time kind of lying there. And sometimes it's peaceful and I'm just sort of floating on nice thoughts. But a lot of the time that's when the sort of spin cycle happens. And there's really no shortage of things to worry about, as it turns out. Obviously, you know, I have a kid who's a junior in high school. There's a lot of material there. You know, that's when I do get a lot done because I'll think about all this stuff. I'll think about music a lot then too. And so it can be productive, even though it's kind of annoying because I'd rather be asleep, but that it can be that kind of thing. But all of my, you know, just worrying about the world going to hell and all the various ways that it is going to hell right now, like that stuff, it just kind of circles around and you know, it's like looking for solutions. And certainly with music and stuff, I'll find them sometimes in there, and I'll find sometimes answers to questions, but sometimes it just feels like it's just a merry-go-round of, you know, futility. So it's kind of like not just that middle of the night stuff, but basically like all the trying, all of the kind of self-questioning, all of the pushing through things that you need to push through, like all that kind of stuff. It's like just hoping that that's all going to actually inch you forward, or inch in some cases like us as like as a whatever, a country, a species, you know, like just that we're actually gonna, you know, inch ourselves forward through all of this work that we're doing. So, I mean, I think, so yeah, but it ends on that line, meet me now, I'm ready. It's like, I think of that as a hopeful line, as an opening to like, to being changed or to being enlightened in some way, you know, like that's where I was hoping to leave that. Does that help?
Great. Yes. Yes, it does.
Okay, good.
I feel better about this record.
I'm so glad.
Thank you. Okay. Your daughter, Hazel, has put out one song into the world, and she has been playing some gigs. She is a junior in high school, but I'm wondering, what is the latest with Hazel's music? Is she moving to Nashville to get a record deal? What is happening?
Not that I have heard about it. Yep. She's like, she is a force of music. It's really wild to watch her just continue to grow into it. You probably can't hear, but she's playing piano downstairs right now. She's kind of like, it's mostly just hers right now. She's very happy to share it, and she'll perform when she gets the chance, and she'll just like play, you know, if there's like people over and we're all just hanging around in the kitchen, which is where the piano is, she'll play some songs, you know, and she's not worried about that at all. Like, she's very comfy doing it, but she's recorded probably 3 full albums of stuff. But because she's the age that she is, like, by the time we're even done with it, she's over it, you know?
Yeah.
So that's where she's at. She's just like, she puts so much time into it, and right now it's just hers, and it's awesome. And I almost like envy it a little tiny bit, you know?
Yeah, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any updates on trends that are happening that Hazel has told you about that you can share with us?
Oh my God, I'm sure I do. I mean, the ice bucket challenge is back. I just dumped a bucket of ice water on her. There's that. Let's see. I mean, it's mostly just like terminology, which is ever changing and very vivid. I find high schoolers hilarious. And I guess I was sort of scared in the standard way that people are scared of having a teenager. And it's just honestly the best. And it's so freaking funny all the time. So I don't know. I am trying to think of specific things that they have. It's more just like the way that they, just their lens is really funny, and they can make a little joke or a little like running bit out of absolutely anything. So I don't know. They're just so funny to have around, but I can't of course think of anything specific. At 3 in the morning, I will be thinking of
you
answers.
Will. Yes.
And
give
I will text you at that time.
Yeah. Ice bucket challenge really got me. I went up like a few octaves in my response.
You did,
so
yeah.
That one really worked. All right, Chris, let's do the lightning round.
Oh, yeah.
This is a special garden themed lightning round. What type of plant are you in your garden?
Oh, God. I am asparagus.
What about Jeff?
Let's see. Jeff is maybe like a, I think he's a tree, maybe a peach tree.
That's cute.
He's pretty solid.
But peachy. Which plant gives you the hardest time?
Well, I guess it's not a plant I have on purpose, but this freaking plant, Japanese knotweed, which is like, the thing in the Terminator that was the guy made of liquid metal, and if you killed it, it turned into more liquid metal. You know who I'm talking about?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a weed that's like that.
Which plant is the most musical?
Well, that's so nice. I mean, the first thing I think of is just grass, because you can blow it with your, you know, but you can play it, but that's not that exciting. I mean, there's a lot of, the names of a lot of them are super pretty, you know, like Forsythia is so pretty. Hazel, we were just talking about, she was really aggressively wanted Rose Polanzani to name her baby Forsythia. for Cynthia Polanzani. So I, you know, I've made a whole song out of flower names. So I guess that's a little bit of a cop out, but I would say a lot of those names, Magnolia, which is what I'm looking at right now. I have a song called that. JJ Cale has a song called that. Yeah. Let's go with that.
Okay. This one is, which flower looks most like a person?
Well, I don't know if it's a person, but have you ever seen a fava bean flower?
No.
Because it kind of looks like a panda. It's definitely facey. It's black and white. It's really cool. Right. You should see one.
I'm going to look that up. Yeah, we'll accept that answer. Okay, let's do this one. What plant is the most fragrant or smelliest?
Well, mock orange. Have you ever heard of that one?
Mm-mm.
It's really cool. It's really pretty. And it's about to bloom in the next few weeks. And it's like, it sort of smells like orange flower, and it makes your entire neighborhood smell like orange flower. And my grandma had one in her yard in Brooklyn, and that's why I planted one, is because that smell, it just like completely puts me in her yard in Brooklyn as a kid, and it's so cool.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, this is the last one. What is the scariest plant in the garden?
Well, that's not weed is, but I'm going to think of a different one for you. It's definitely the scariest. I don't know if you've ever seen a radish that like you didn't pick and forgot to pick, and it was a spring radish, and then it was in the ground all year, and then you pull it out in the fall, but it looks like an actual monster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That can kind of look like a chemical burn victim.
Exactly. Or like a sort of five-eyed frog, kind of like a nuclear accident kind of situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Elderly radish. I'm going with that.
All right, we did it. Thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you for having me.
And congrats on the record.
Thank you.
This episode of Basic Folk was produced by Anthony Cabrera. Basic Folk is a production of The Bluegrass Situation. You can find all of our episodes there. You can check out basicfolk.com. You can go to folkalley.com or Folk Alley's mobile app. Check us out on the SiriusXM app by searching for Basic Folk. Or you can listen wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode, I suggest sharing it with all your gardener friends who are always like, blah, 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 I love gardening. I'm in the garden and my life is stress-free because I garden all the time. They're going to want to check out this episode. All right, thanks for listening all the way to the end. Talk to you next time. Bye.